Hare Krishna, everybody. Please accept my humble obeisances. We'll go to Srila Prabhupada. So I believe we are covering Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 6. And we're going to be reading verses 245 through to 255. And we'll read the purport for verse 255. So I'm going to read verses 245 and 255, which actually are composed in a different meter to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I believe they are in Sanskrit, that's why. And so I'll read both of those verses, and then I'm going to go back and read the translation from verse 245 to 255. And then we'll read the purport for 255. So we'll go back to 244. So we're still on the chapter where Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are having their pastimes. So Gopinath Acharya, 245, offering his obeisances to Gopinath Acharya, the Bhattacharya said, "Because I am related to you and you are a devotee, by your mercy, the Lord has shown mercy to me. You are a first-class devotee, whereas I am the darkness of logical arguments. Because of your relationship with the Lord has bestowed his benediction upon me." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased with this humble statement. After embracing the Bhattacharya, he said, "Now go see Lord Jagannath in the temple." After visiting the temple of Lord Jagannath, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya returned home with Jagadananda and Damodar. The Bhattacharya brought large quantities of excellent food remnants blessed by Lord Jagannath. All this prasadam was given to his own Brahmin servant, along with Jagadananda and Damodar. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then composed two verses on the leaf of a palm tree. Giving the palm leaf to Jagadananda Prabhu, the Bhattacharya requested him to deliver it to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Jagadananda and Damodar then returned to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, bringing him both the prasadam and the palm leaf on which the verses were composed. But Mukunda Datta took the palm leaf from the hands of Jagadananda before he could deliver it to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mukunda Datta then copied the two verses on the wall outside the room. After this, Jagadananda took the palm leaf from Mukunda Datta and delivered it to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As soon as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu read the two verses, he immediately tore up the palm leaf. However, all the devotees read these verses on the outside wall, and they all kept them within their hearts. The verses read as follows. "Let me take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has descended in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach us real knowledge. His devotional service and detachment from whatever does not foster Krishna consciousness, he has descended because he is an ocean of transcendental mercy. Let me surrender unto his feet." I'm going to read that again. "Let me take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has descended in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach us real knowledge, his devotional service, and detachment from whatever does not foster Krishna consciousness. He has descended because he is an ocean of transcendental mercy. Let me surrender unto his lotus feet." Now, Srila Prabhupada in the purport says that this verse and the following verse, 255, are included in the Chaitanya Chandradaya Natak, 674 to 675 by Kavi Karnakorna. So 255, the translation is, "Let my consciousness, which is like a honeybee, take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has just now appeared as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to teach the ancient system of devotional service to himself. This system had almost been lost due to the influence of time." Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. As Lord Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 7, "Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata, abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam shijamyaham." Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharat, and a predominant rise of a religion, at that time I descend myself. This is also the case with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in this world as a disguised incarnation of Krishna, but his appearance is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Mahabharata, and other Vedic scriptures. He appeared in order to teach the fallen souls in this material world. For in this age of Kali, almost everyone has become attached to fruitive and ritualistic activities and mental speculation. Consequently, there was a great need to revive the system of devotional service. The Lord himself personally came down, disguised as a devotee, so that the fallen populace might take advantage of the Lord's example. At the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna advised complete surrender unto him, promising all protection to his devotee. Unfortunately, people are so fallen that they cannot accept the instructions of Lord Krishna. Therefore, Krishna returned with the same mission, but he executed it in a different way. As Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he ordered us to surrender unto himself. But as Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught us how to surrender to Krishna. Therefore, he is praised by the Goswamis. Namo Maha Vadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate. Lord Sri Krishna is certainly the personality of Godhead, but he is not as magnanimous as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Krishna simply gave orders for one to become his devotee. Manmana Bhavamad Bhakta. But Sri Krishna Mahaprabhu actually taught the process of Krishna consciousness. If one wants to become a devotee of Lord Krishna, he must first take shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, following in the footsteps of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and other exalted devotees. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Savitam Savarutam Parijana Asitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sate Devi Brahmami Hari Priye Panchaka Paturubhischa Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadigaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I want to read the translation for 245 and 255 again. Let me take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who has descended in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach us real knowledge. His devotional service and detachment from whatever does not foster Krishna consciousness. He has descended because he is an ocean of transcendental mercy. Let me surrender unto his lotus feet. Let my consciousness, which is like a honeybee, take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has just now appeared as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach the ancient system of devotional service to himself. This system had almost been lost due to the influence of time. at this point, we are seeing the full transformation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Somebody who was very favorable to the Lord, but had up until the time that he has this conversation for 7 days with Lord Chaitanya, was taking shelter of Mayavadi or impersonalist philosophy. There was no understanding, no comprehension of a loving relationship with God, one of unconditional love, one of bliss and joy, one of personal relationship. And these two verses, they are extremely significant for many, many reasons. Now, the first reason in relation to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya himself is that prior to actually surrendering to Lord Chaitanya, he had no real understanding of who Lord Chaitanya actually was. He understood him to be a great scholar. He had deep respect for him. He also had affection for him. And because of that affection, that innocence, that lack of envy of God, even though he was following impersonalist philosophy and he was a great logician, he thought he would approach Lord Chaitanya. And they had this wonderful discussion. Well, actually, it wasn't really a discussion. He actually preached in his own mind. He was sharing, teaching Lord Chaitanya for 7 days. And for 7 days, Lord Chaitanya stayed quiet, as we know, out of respect, showing respect out of seniority. But he didn't let that respect get in the way of giving him the truth. In fact, he was so attracted by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's affection for him and actually lack of envy that he gave Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya the conclusion, actually, really, that actually you had to deviate so much from what these verses are saying, that you haven't actually really understood the essence. And he gives Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya real prema, gives him love for God. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya chooses to accept this love. He doesn't have to. Free will is there even up until the point of being offered prema. We have to not just want it, but accept it. And it's because of this love, he's able to see who Lord Chaitanya is. Philosophy doesn't allow us to see who Krishna is or recognize Krishna when he is in our presence, whichever form he's come in, whether it's somebody else's instruction, whether it's an incarnation, whether it's Krishna's voice through guru, or maybe even somebody we perceive to be our enemy, right? So philosophy doesn't let us see who he is, but it maybe makes us a little bit more receptive. Why? Because our ego gets in the way, our false ego gets in the way. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, once he had some love and affection, real love and affection and surrender for Lord Chaitanya, that love removes false ego. That love stops the false ego from blocking what Krishna is trying to tell us. And so he's able to compose these two verses that very boldly declare to everybody who Lord Chaitanya is. Now, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is giving us some insight into really what's magnanimous about Lord Chaitanya's appearance and some aspect of it. There are so many layers to it. And he points out that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna simply instructs, whereas Lord Chaitanya is magnanimous because he shows us. Right? Anyone can teach. Anyone can give words. But it is that, so anyone can have bracha words, right? But not everybody has achara. Not everybody shows us. So really we learn best when we have examples around us. This is why we associate with devotees. So Krishna, in Bhagavad Gita, he very clearly, it's not that the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita is different to Srimad Bhagavatam, different to Chaitanya Charitamrita, or there's some different philosophy in it. Krishna's saying the same thing in the fourth chapter. If you continue with the verses after what Prabhupada's quoted about Krishna's reason for coming, to reestablish relationships, please the devotees, he continues to annihilate the miscreants. But ultimately that many, many people after, engaging in service to him, and understanding the nature of his appearance and disappearance, and having knowledge of him, they develop love for him. He even talks about in the Bhagavad Gita how he talks about the sacrifice of the age, sacrifice of this age, chanting his holy names. He talks about devotional qualities that we can develop in the pursuit of the process, in the pursuit of the goal, and as a yardstick of how we are doing in our devotional life. And Arjuna asks him, how does a devotee sit? How does he walk? How does he talk? And so we have our 26 qualities of a devotee. Srimad Bhagavatam shows us in real life, right, through the lives of many, many devotees, what these processes are like. You know, the chanting of the holy names, hearing, archanam, deity worship, service to the lotus feet of, following the Lord's instructions, befriending him, prayer, all of our processes of devotional service, how they can be executed, how the different devotional qualities manifest. And this is shown through different ages. It's shown in Satyug, Tretyug, Dwarpyug. It's shown in different types of ashrams. Right? We have examples in Srimad Bhagavatam of exalted devotees in Brahmachari ashram, Grahastha ashram, in Vanaprast, Sannyas, throughout the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam transcends time and space in that we hear about activities that have happened not just in our particular cycle of yugas, or even in our universe, but in other universes, in other times, in other places. Srimad Bhagavatam even gives us the nectar of Krishna's pastimes. Krishna's pastimes as our ultimate goal and Krishna's pastimes as our origin. Even goes through pastimes of different species. Look at Gajendra the elephant. He's an elephant. He's not even a human being. But what do we get from Chaitanya Charitamrita? Through Chaitanya Charitamrita, the thing we get, which is not present in Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, not in as much detail, Lord Chaitanya doesn't just come himself to show us. But what he comes to show us is how to surrender, how to have pure loving devotion in the human experience of Kali Yuga. In the human experience of Kali Yuga. So Kali Yuga is a difficult time because it is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Those two things happen by default. They are part of every human being's experience. There's quarrel and there's hypocrisy. Even if we try to fight it, if we're not like that, the people around us are like that. So developing the 26 qualities, or rediscovering our 26 natural qualities as a Vaishnava, engaging in the process of devotional service in Kali Yuga, in a human experience, can be challenging. It is challenging. And yes, we understand that Lord Chaitanya internally, there's Krishna wanting to experience Radharani's path. But this also has the simultaneous effect that who better to show us how to be a pure devotee in the human experience in Kali Yuga than Krishna coming in the mood of his topmost devotee, Srimati Radharani. With all compassion, with no consideration of that life in Kali Yuga is hard. It is the age when perhaps people wouldn't pick to come to planet Earth, because the environment is really stacked against us in devotional service. So this is why he's magnanimous. He gives the highest freely. He shows us how to engage in this process in our human experience in this day, time, and space. He shows us through the different ashrams throughout his life. He shows us through his interactions with the devotees. You know, even in this particular pastime, he highlights that as Vaishnavas, we, not out of ego, but out of compassion, interact with devotees depending on our relationship with them. You look at Mukunda Dutt, he takes the palm leaf from Sarva Brahma Bhattacharya before he even gets to Lord Chaitanya, and he copies these verses onto the wall. How does he have a right to do that? How has he felt like he could do that? This is supposed to go, because he's extremely intimate and dear to Lord Chaitanya. Actually, in Gaura Ganadesh Dipika, it's described that Mukunda Datta is a singer in Krishna's pastimes. And actually, he, in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, also sings in many of the many kirtans, but key moments in Lord Chaitanya's life. For example, he is singing when Lord Chaitanya takes sannyas as well. So he has a very intimate relationship. And he also knows that actually for Lord Chaitanya to be able to be successful in showing us how to be a devotee in this time as a human, it is important for Lord Chaitanya to hide his identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so he knows that the minute that Lord Chaitanya sees that anyone's recognized it and is declaring it boldly, Lord Chaitanya is going to want to quieten that. However, Mukunda Datta also knows that the devotees who already see this will take great pleasure in seeing that another personality, somebody else, Sarva Brahma Bhattacharya, has also recognized this. So actually in our devotional life, recognizing and accepting Lord Chaitanya as non-different to Lord Krishna is part of our growth. Because when we not just accept him, but understand him to be Srimati Radharani and Krishna, then we can really approach Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda and his associates in the mood that we are part of the same family, and he's been so kind to extend himself and give us a real life example of this is how you should live. This is how you can feel. This is what it's like to be a devotee in this world. You can have this. This is how happy it can make you. It's shown in his associates. His associates are of all different backgrounds, ashrams, levels of poverty and wealth. They are from, he's really shown us that there is no obstacle in this Kali Yuga human experience to achieving this sweetness of the deepest and highest relationship with Krishna. And he's so magnanimous and gives it to us so fully that he's able to condense all of it in just 8 verses. And this is not meant to be a thorough study, in-depth study of the Shikshastakam verses. But I did want to just briefly run through the translations and some of the ways in which Lord Chaitanya is showing us. He's bringing Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam to another level. He is giving us this process of Shraddha to Prema in just 8 verses, very simply. What do we do as devotees? What is our mood as devotees? What is our attitude as devotees? And how do we feel as a devotee? And then ultimately, what is the experience of being a devotee? Rather than trying to be a devotee, when we actually get to that point. So I'm just going to read the translations and just make a couple of comments on each verse. So first verse of Shikshastakam, glory to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years and extinguishes the fire of conditional life, of repeated birth and death. This Sankirtan movement is the prime benediction for humanity at large because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon. It is the life of all transcendental knowledge. It increases the ocean of transcendental bliss, and it enables us to fully taste the nectar for which we are always anxious. So this point of Shraddha, this first stepping stone for us as Vaishnavas, really it has to be, for us to achieve prem, has to be wrapped up in this verse, wrapped up really in surrendering to Krishna and the holy names, Krishna being the holy names and the holy names being Krishna, being non-different. That actually, if I call Krishna, if I connect with Krishna, this is the beginning and end of everything. This is Shraddha. The Shraddha can be of many types. This is the Shraddha we take shelter of as devotees. And this holy name, the sacrifice of chanting Krishna's names, is very clearly discussed many times in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna himself says he is, you know, of sacrifices. He's the chanting of his holy names. Oh, my Lord, second verse, your holy name alone can render all benedictions to living beings. And thus you have hundreds and millions of names like Krishna and Govinda. In these transcendental names, you have invested all your transcendental energies. There are not even hard and fast rules for chanting these names. Oh, my Lord, out of kindness, you enable us to easily approach you by your holy names. But I'm so unfortunate that I have no attraction for them. So we're now, again, there's so many angles we can take this from. But in our process of moving from Shraddha to Sadhu Sangha, where we are further, you know, enticed, further attracted to the different processes of devotional service, to where we come to Bhajan Kriya, regulated devotional service under the direction of a spiritual master, whether that's prior to initiation or after initiation, we will come to some realization that actually really it's a tough gig to be attracted to the holy names and consistently chant them, even though there's no hard and fast rules, even though they have, even though Krishna's invested all of his transcendental energies, even though it brings us all the pleasure. You know, we speak of this natural desire for an effortless peak of pleasure, even though the holy names can give us that over and over again. Instead, we're recognizing that actually I'm so unfortunate, don't have any attraction for them. So Lord Chaitanya then goes on to say, well, how can we develop this attraction? One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and should be ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. If we look at what tends to distract us from our chanting, in the immediate moment when we are chanting, we may not be feeling particularly puffed up. We may not be, you know, feeling like we're better than anybody. But chanting isn't just about the 90 minutes or 2 hours that we chant. It's the entire 24 hours around it. And the 24 hours or 22 hours around it are a preparation for our chanting, but also they are the consequence of our chanting. And what we often find is our mind goes in multiple directions. It's dragged around by the story that our false ego gives us. And it is the struggle, the pain of having to tolerate, the pain of giving respects to others and not having any respects received to us is actually really felt on a false ego level. It's on our transient identity here, who we are here. When that is bruised, when that is damaged, that is when we feel that pain. And so if we look at what distracts us, what stops us from feeling the love that Krishna is sending to us through his name, through being with us in his name, and through many other ways, those are, it really is our challenge with letting go of who we are here. You know, actually in 4.10 Bhagavad Gita, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, one has to get rid of all three stages of material consciousness: attachment to material life, fear of a spiritual personal identity, and the conception of void that arises from frustration in life. To get freed from these three stages of the material concept of life, one has to take complete shelter of the Lord, guided by the bona fide spiritual master, and follow the disciplines and regulative principles of devotional life. The last stage of devotional life is called Bhav, or transcendental love of Godhead. So one of these three stages is free of fear of a spiritual personal identity. We get so locked into this identity that embracing our natural identity will naturally fill us with fear. Why will it naturally fill us with fear? Because the mind is a sitting place of fear. And where the mind is a sitting place of fear, as long as the mind is in the shadow of the false ego and not illuminated by the sunshine of the soul, then we will be riddled with fear. Where even perfection, a spiritual personal identity, the idea of having that, the idea of having another identity beyond what we know now, fills us with fear. Isn't that what happens with every change that takes place in our life? Change is usually fills us with some anxiety or fear, depending on the degree of change. And ultimately, we experience our greatest fear when we are leaving this body, because we have to let go of this identity. But whilst we're here, whilst we're engaging in devotional service, Prabhupada's explaining that actually this fear of a personal spiritual identity is there because to truly experience it, to truly embrace it, we have to be willing to, and it doesn't have to be overnight, at least slowly loosening our grip on who we think we are. And more often than not, who we think other people think we are. And really becoming who we actually are. So this mood of chanting with humility, with tolerance, and being able to chant the holy name of the Lord constantly is often blocked by the pleasures and pains which are dictated to us by the false ego of our human experience. You know, we often talk about association as crystals, right? And crystals reflect off simply the light that is shone on them. Okay. But crystals do another thing. Crystals also refract. You put white light through a crystal, you'll see it creates a rainbow. It's one of the reasons why we all love crystals so much. You know, they make everything beautiful. You get this rainbow colored light. So Krishna's mercy is always flowing. Lord Chaitanya's mercy is always flowing through the holy names. It's pure. That purity is coming through. That purity is also coming through. Those blessings are coming through everyone, actually. Everyone, if we view it in the right way, is Krishna's voice, is Krishna's loving affection, sometimes tough love, sometimes soft love. And if we can recognize that this love is always flowing in our direction, but there are many people we encounter, some through choice, sometimes seems like it's not through choice. They are refracting to different degrees. They're bending this light. Okay. Sometimes that light looks beautiful and we accept it. Sometimes that light looks, are you my enemy? Are you really thinking about me? Are you favorable to me? And we may accept or reject. But if we recognize ultimately that actually on the other side of all this refraction, all this bending, stay with me here. Maybe we're getting a little bit too much with physics, but stay with me. If we see all those different parts as individual things, then we separate ourselves from that original white light, right? When a physicist looks at what a crystal or any medium does to white light or clear light or pure light, they don't forget that actually originally there was white light coming through this medium. Right? Because if you forget that, then you won't be able to really work with the separated parts because you've forgotten the origin. So just this third verse in terms of practical humility and the mood with which we should chant, if we can take, you know, this understanding in this example that love, really, love and affection for each other is the most powerful way in which we can shift our false ego. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is a perfect example of this. Then we can be receptive to hearing and seeing and feeling Krishna's affection, Guru's affection, and actually Acharya's affection and our entire parampara's affection for us through everyone we encounter, even those who may be bending the light of mercy in a way that doesn't appear to be so palatable, right? Even when you look at the colors of the rainbow, you have favorites. Right? Some people are attracted to the purples and the blues, some like the red and orange. So this is what our human experience is like. We don't always recognize when Krishna's love is coming through. So as we chant like this constantly, what happens next? Oh, Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor do I desire beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. So anartha nivritti, our unwanted things get removed when we chant incessantly. This is what he's showing us. Because you look at Lord Chaitanya's life, he loses interest in everything. As he moves from his childhood pastimes, where he even shows us, actually, if you read in Adi Leela, the verses that describe how Lord Chaitanya was a great logician and would defeat the children around. There's a phrase, with pride. You know, pride is an anartha. So he shows us how we become pure, but actually take shelter of the holy names. As you take shelter of the holy names, you'll become so attracted to Krishna. You become so attracted to him that really there's nothing here that will hold more value. Nothing here that will hold more value, you know, where your desire falls to asking for more of it. If it comes, it comes. If it doesn't, that's also fine. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. O son of Maharaj Nanda, I am your eternal servitor. Yet somehow or other, I've fallen into the ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up from this ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms of your lotus feet. So now, one is really recognizing, now feeling, my gosh, I'm really feeling so close to you, Krishna. I just want to be near you. It doesn't matter how, just place me near you. I recognize it was my choice to go, to fall. But please, can you please pick me up? Please accept me. Oh, my Lord, when will my eyes be decorated with tears of love flowing constantly when I chant your holy name? When will my voice choke up? And when will the hairs of my body stand on end at the recitation of your name? So as Krishna accepts us and we accept Krishna, as we become aware, as Prabhupada says, of, you know, we lose our fear of a spiritual personal identity and we become more aware of our spiritual personal identity. We will experience our eyes being decorated with tears of love, but we want more of it. So this is what Lord Chaitanya is praying for. We want more and more. There's a taste. There's an attachment for it. And then he says, oh, Govinda, feeling your separation, I am considering a moment to be like 12 years or more. Tears are flowing from my eyes like torrents of rain, and I am feeling all vacant in the world in your absence. The feeling of missing Krishna. You only miss someone. We only miss someone when we have real attachment for them. Not just that we like them, but we have real attachment, real affection. We start to develop real love for them. That they are conspicuous by their absence. They're always there by their absence. And last but not least, I know no one but Krishna as my Lord. And he shall remain so even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me. He is completely free to do anything and everything, for he is always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. There's maybe some of you have heard it because it was sent out on lots of different WhatsApp groups. But before Jankinath Prabhu left, he was sent many wonderful messages by many, many saintly personalities in in our assembled devotees and, you know, in ISKCON. And one of them for me that stood out, there were many wonderful ones, but I just wanted to share a small bit from one of them. And I hope Maharaj doesn't mind me sharing this. So Kadambakarna Maharaj left him a very wonderful message. It's 23 minutes long. The audio is widely available. It was shared through many groups. Please listen to it if you get a chance. He really takes Jankinath Prabhu on a walk to the spiritual world. He goes on the journey with him. And right towards the end, Maharaj is inviting Jankinath. He's saying, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go to the spiritual world. Prior to this, he also points out that there's nothing here. There's nothing here to hold you back. And actually, because of Maharaj's compassion, when you hear this, it feels like he's speaking to all of us. And in this mood of let's go, let's go, let's go to the spiritual world, actually, if we really are willing to be open to this idea of dying before dying, with all the things that come up in our minds and hearts to give us reasons for not surrendering, reasons for not being fully present when we chant, reasons for not being open-hearted with our interactions with Vaishnavas, reasons for not being authentic and self-compassionate, recognizing our limitations as really only being on the bodily and mental platform. If we can do that, then this mood of let's go to the spiritual world, we can embrace that every day. It will start with being able to embrace it. You'll hold it maybe for a few seconds. Then those few seconds will turn to minutes. And then those minutes will turn to hours. Our process of Krishna consciousness is really so very joyful because it is accessible. And Lord Chaitanya has made it extremely accessible through these glorious eight verses, through his own example, and through the example of his devotees. They're all Krishna's intimate associates in Goloka Vrindavan. They're his friends and family. They are our friends and family. But when they come with him in Kali Yuga, they all show us the human experience of being a devotee. Some of them have greater hardships than any of us will ever encounter. Some of them have the ability and have the mercy, well, the Lord has bestowed the mercy on them to show us how we overcome these challenges. So if you haven't already read Chaitanya Charitamrita, please read Chaitanya Charitamrita, because this is our handbook of how to surrender as a human being in the Kali Yuga experience. Or the human experience of Kali Yuga anyway. I just want to say, spend maybe make one last comment about this, because Lord Jagannath is mentioned in this particular section. And, you know, the carving of Lord Jagannath, I'm sure tomorrow, it's Rath Yatra. Tomorrow we're going to have a wonderful Rath Yatra festival in London. Tomorrow I'm sure whoever gives class will share more on Rath Yatra. But Rath Yatra, the deities that were carved were carved about 2,500 years ago, 3,000 years ago. Yeah, 3,000 years ago. So 5,000 years ago, the pastime of Balaram, Krishna and Subhadra going to the battle of Kurukshetra, visiting Kurukshetra, sorry, not the battle of Kurukshetra, but visiting Kurukshetra, the pastime with the gopis where these ecstatic symptoms appear in the body of Jagannath Baladev Subhadra, or Krishna, Balaram and Subhadra. It takes place 5,000 years ago. 2,000 years after that, Indrajumna Maharaj is through his affection, through his love for the Lord, is the recipient of the mercy. And it's through his prayer and through his desire that the form of the Lord and his siblings in this ecstatic facial expression and pastime is carved on the pretense that it's an incomplete deity. 2,500 years later, Lord Chaitanya appears. 2,500 years after Indrajumna Maharaj has these deities carved to really glorify the beauty and the goal, our goal, a goal of being in the mood of giving Krishna this much pleasure, right? Where we become a recipient of that pleasure through love and surrender. And really, this Rath Yatra became famous because of Lord Chaitanya. And interestingly, Indrajumna Maharaj is there in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes as King Prataparudra. And so I think the reason I wanted to really share this is Maharaj Prataparudra is also a wonderful example of how in the human experience of Kali Yuga, there's nothing holding us back from surrender. If we are able to really be authentic, because authenticity brings humility. And, Lord Chaitanya didn't initially accept Maharaj Prataparudra because he was so wealthy and it went against Lord Chaitanya's sannyas ashram to mix. But when he saw Prataparudra's humility at sweeping the floor with, humbly, like a nobody in front of Lord Jagannath's cart, then he embraced him. He gave him his full love. So really, again, another example that it doesn't matter what our human experience in this world looks like, what permutation or combination we have, what wealth we have or lack of wealth, what education or lack of education, which gender or non-gender, which job, it doesn't really matter. This is the magnanimity of Lord Chaitanya. So maybe we can open up for comments. Any questions or even corrections? So over to you, Hare Krishna.
Krishna, thank you for the amazing class. Just to give a brief summary on the class in general, we walked through many, many different things, and I think the main point that you're really trying to emphasize is about our route is to not just amass the knowledge, etc., it's to actually develop that loving relationship with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with the whole process, as well as Krishna in general. And I really liked the whole pastime that you shared around Kadamukhana Maharaj and Jagannath Prabhu, around the whole idea of let's go to the spiritual world. And we can't develop that desire if we don't develop that loving feelings towards Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Krishna, etc. So really, thank you for that. A question just whilst we wait for temple room devotees to see questions. So you were talking about how part of our growth in Krishna consciousness is actually to develop that understanding and the attitude towards Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being Krishna, just in the mood of Radharani. But oftentimes, especially in the early stages of Krishna consciousness, we get suggested that, focus on Bhagavad Gita, then Srimad Bhagavatam, then the CC. So I just wanted to get your thoughts and opinions on how we can develop that sort of relationship with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, develop that love, that association and that mood that, yes, he is non-different to Krishna, in those sorts of stages.
Thank you for that question. Actually, although so Prabhupada describes, if you look at Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and CC, it says Bhagavad Gita is undergraduate study, Srimad Bhagavatam is graduate, and Chaitanya Charitamrita is postgraduate. However, there are aspects of the graduate and postgraduate that Prabhupada felt was so important for us to know that he made summary studies of them. For example, Krishna book. So although he says don't go into 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam until you've read the first nine, still he knows this understanding Krishna's appearance and disappearance and his past just in themselves are so purifying and will increase our attraction for him. They said, okay, I will write Krishna book. you know, so that nobody misses out. And same with Chaitanya Charitamrita. He takes the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Okay, he takes the essence, the nectar. Because what happens is when we connect with Lord Chaitanya as a person, as an individual, in his own right, as well as understanding that he's non-different to Krishna and Srimati Radharani, we access a different type of mercy. We access a type of mercy that doesn't accept offense. This is why Prabhupada would say that actually anybody can have Gaurindai deities, because Gaurindai, they don't accept any offense. In fact, I was reading one of the Prabhupada memories that at one point, Srila Prabhupada also said that, you know, I mean, obviously, we want to have the best standard, but he said this Gaurindai is so merciful that even if somebody's given Gaurindai and they are sitting on the shelf and nobody worships them, they will still send mercy. And actually, I know of families where they were given Gaurindai deities, nobody worshiped them. But before they knew it, something in their heart changed. So first they just started giving them, you know, a stick of incense. Then they would leave water for them, then maybe a flower, and then they start dressing them. And slowly, slowly, their attraction builds. Other cases, they've got Gaurindai on their altar, just on a shelf, and they stop eating meat. They start engaging in some of the basic things that prepare them to surrender. So we access Krishna's mercy by connecting with Lord Chaitanya in such a way that no offense is accepted. And I think the danger is, even though we understand that CC is postgraduate study, sometimes your question is specifically about, I know it was specifically about when we first joined Krishna consciousness, but actually I think when we first join, we are so open-hearted often, right? And everything's so fresh that we accept Krishna and Lord Chaitanya equally. We accept everything equally. Sometimes what can happen though is when we start to progress and go further in the interim period before we develop maturity, we may be pulled by thinking, actually, let me focus all my attention on Krishna because that's the goal. And, oh, Lord Chaitanya is just there as a, you know, teacher, as an example. But actually, you know, in Goloka Vrindavan, there's very clear descriptions that we have dual identity there. We have an eternal identity in Krishna Leela and we have an eternal identity in Gaura Leela. You know, so when devotees are very mature stages, they are meditating on different ones depending on which way they're inclined and where the mercy has been flowing from. But with Lord Chaitanya, it is we access a different kind of mercy, and the kind of mercy that not just through him but through his associates, because all of his associates are also very alive in the teachings. Right? Look at all of our books of the Goswamis. They're not written by people we can't relate to. They are not written by people who don't know what it's like to live in this world, right? They're not written by somebody in Satyug on, you know, planet, in the heavenly planets, right? Somebody who's dealing with, it's only 500 years ago. Things weren't that different. It's not even ancient Egyptian times or ancient Greek. It's 500 years ago. So we access a different kind of mercy, A, one that doesn't accept offense, and B, one that's real, standing shoulder to shoulder, side by side. You know, you look at Rupa Goswami, for example. He was in politics, right? And he was an advisor to a king. I mean, if there's any job that gets your head really in material, it's politics. And yet, when you develop such an attraction, you can be in that work and not in that work at the same time. Be in this world, but not of this world, right? And ultimately to a point where you think, okay, let's go to the spiritual. And he leaves that and he's able to, you know, really with consciousness, with internally be with Krishna all the time, whether his body's in that work or not. So this mood, you know, I know you mentioned that this pastime between Kadambakarna Maharaj and Janakinath Prabhu is so sweet, but it really is. Please listen to those 23 minutes. It's if we can have that consciousness daily, moment to moment, You know, it's, we can have, we don't have to wait till the time of death for prema. Right, Prabhupada said this in the Antya Lila. There's three places, three of his purports. He says very clearly, one can become a nitya siddha in this lifetime, not at the end of this lifetime, not 3 seconds before you're about to leave the body, but at the, in this lifetime. You know, and how much more, you know, and that's one way we can reciprocate with Lord Chaitanya, is we can become such a finely tuned instrument. You know, let's not be the, you know, in the refraction of that light bear the crystal, let's be the person who's able to allow Krishna's mercy to flow through freely without disturbing others, you know. So it's easy to recognize. So sorry for my long answer.
No, it was really nice elaboration. Can actually see like your desire to actually develop that relationship itself come up as well. So that, thank you for that. We do have a couple of questions from the temple room actually. So one is from Peda Prabhu. His question is, thank you for the incredible class. It seems like there is a very close relationship between fearlessness and humility, like opposite sides of a coin. Could you elaborate on this? Thank you.
So, you know, we often make the mistake of recognizing humility by external behavior or personality traits. But actually, humility is very practical. Humility is an attitude, it's a mood, and it's an attitude which holds within it submissiveness. It holds within it fearlessness, and it also holds within it compassion. So when we're looking at humility in terms of practical humility, it is almost an umbrella term which has so many things which are connected to it. So humility ultimately means recognizing that I'm not just this. When we recognize that I'm not just this, it gives us space to recognize, well, then what more am I? Who am I in my complete sense? And when we understand who we are in our complete sense, we recognize then that we're backed up. And that makes us fearless. Because fear makes everything dangerous, right? Everything's dangerous. Even things we've done before. You know, as you get older, things that you did when you were younger become, oh, I don't want to do that. Like, I like to think for my age, I'm still pretty, you know, fearless. And I can still do some of the things that I did when I was younger. But there are some things like, for example, funfair rides, right? The really scary ones when I was 18, wouldn't even think about it. Get on that ride and ride that ride. I wouldn't think about it and I'd enjoy it. Now I look at it and I forget it, you know, because it fills me with, because it's not pleasurable, right? So this mood of fearlessness, it comes when we have the humility to accept that because this isn't just who I am, then actually the faults and mistakes of the mind and body, whilst it's my responsibility to make sure they don't interfere with my service, it's my responsibility to make sure I don't offend others, they're not something that I should meditate on so much that it removes from my ability to serve, right? Because sometimes we become almost fearful of other people seeing our stuff. They see it anyway. They see things we don't see, right? And this is where compassion comes in. When we're compassionate to ourselves, and that compassion means recognizing that actually the false ego, this body, mind are battered and tattered. They've been around for a long time. They're only going to degrade further and they're going to make mistakes. The compassion to accept that, okay, well, but Krishna will accept me, not, yeah, he accepts this too, but actually the person he knows is deep down inside and I'm backed up. He accepts me so much that he accepts me warts and all. So this humility that I'm somebody and nobody simultaneously. I'm somebody to Krishna. I'm somebody to his devotees. At the same time, I'm nobody in the transient sense. Because it's like we're in a dream, right? In your dream, are you somebody? Not really. It's not really it's not really fully there, is it? You might even wake up from your dream and it feels like, wow, you know, I'm still feeling those intense feelings from my dream, but it's still not based on a reality, right? So this is the power of fear. It lingers, gives us an illusion of a reality that isn't really there. So humility has within it bravery, that I'm backed up. Fearless, I'm backed up. I have access to everything at all times. Okay, love, mercy, kindness, the solutions to my obstacles, whatever it is. At the same time, we're submissive. Whatever way Krishna's love is being refracted through in different avenues, we accept, okay, they're different shades of Krishna's love. And then compassion, both for ourselves, because the more authentic we are with ourselves, then we are able to be non-judgmental of others. Because being compassionate towards others means being non-judgmental. And this means I don't see you just as what you're presenting now, because I don't just see myself as just what I'm now. Yeah, I hope that helps.
I hope so. And it was really nice. I was just thinking about the whole pastime of Jadapara that I was just reading. I'm still reading through it. And how, so it was about how he was taking the palanquin of the king. And in that mood, he was always very humble and he had that humility, but then he was fearless about the fact that, yeah, you know, whatever the king wants to do to him, he's like completely accepting it because he understands that he's not the body as well. So, no, thank you. That does shed a lot of light. We have another question from Hirsch Prabhu in the temple room. So, as you mentioned, when we're doing japa, we're trying to make a conscious effort to remember and meditate on our real identity as a spirit soul and as a servant of the Lord. But outside japa, that's not always the case, and our mind gets dragged around by our false ego. So how do we always remember our true identity in our day-to-day lives and activities? Mm. And what does this look like on the mental level? Is it like an affirmation we always need to tell ourselves to put us in the right mood?
Actually, there's stages to chanting and how the holy names manifest for us and how seeing ourselves as an eternal servitor of the Lord manifests. It's different, right? Prabhupada says actually our chanting should just actually really just begin with hearing. Right? When we're chanting, just listen. He says, just listen. Because in that sense, we are expressing our servitude to Krishna. You know, we're expressing this idea that the endeavor is the reward itself. Okay, Krishna, I surrender to you. I'm just gonna hear. Isn't that what Arjuna also did? He said, okay, I surrender, just tell me what to do. So there's a great power in just even listening. Then as we, you know, progress, what we start to see is there are challenges to just listening. And then there are different ways to keep our attention. You know, we have our sense of touch. We have various pictures. You want to engage your eyes. You want to engage your mind. You may read the mantra. You may, you know, some people have a particular pastime they think about. But Prabhupada says we don't need to actually make an extra endeavor to do this. However, as our chanting becomes more connected, what does that mean? That when we're chanting, we are present physically, we are present mentally, we are present with all our five senses, but our heart is also open. Okay, our heart's not disturbed by the day-to-day goings on in the world, right? As we become more present, and as this anartha nivritti, the removal of unwanted things, accelerates, we do start to develop more of a mood of some sort of personal spiritual identity. And that personal spiritual identity, you know, if you read Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, it does first start on a mental platform. It's conceived of on a mental platform. Not imagination. Conceive is different, right? How do you conceive? It's like your mind becomes a womb and gives birth to the seeds of Krishna's mercy, right? By Krishna's mercy, we awaken to that. So there doesn't need to be an artificial endeavor to remind ourselves of this. There can be a meditation. How do we do this outside of japa time? Rather than constantly seeing ourselves as Krishna's servant, he gives us something easier to do. See yourself as a servant of my devotee. Because the devotee is right in front of us. You see yourself as a servant of my devotee, because actually my devotee is going to be even kinder to you than me. That's where Lord Chaitanya has Radharani's mood, because she's kinder. right? This is why we have guru. This is why we have grand gurus and uncles and aunties, and, you know, we have our entire parampara. Because when you're in direct instruction relationship, you kind of feel you have a responsibility, right? The guru has a responsibility to chastise and mold. When you're, you know, like parents, when your uncles and aunties or grandparents or great uncles and great aunts, you show through love, you teach through love. So we are fortunate that we can actually, in practice, stay connected to our relationship with Krishna, of being in this mood of Krishna's servant by seeing ourselves as the servant of the devotees. Because that is the biggest reminder in practical application, in real life. And it is there time and time again throughout Chaitanya Charitamrita that how this mood of das anudas, that I am the servant of the servant of the servant, actually makes me the servant of Krishna. And it's the same in Goloka Vrindavan. It's even when, we go deeper into the teachings and we look at later sections of Nectar of Devotion. Even when you look at the writings of Goswamis, where they're going into the detailed intricacies of interactions between Krishna and his cowherd friends, Krishna and his girlfriends, Krishna and his wives, Krishna and those who have parental affection, you'll actually see that it's not a hankering to, oh, I've got to be the one doing this for Krishna. There's that mood of servant of the servant of the servant. There are huge teams that serve Krishna. The difference is, because there's no envy, there's no false ego. There is a clear path from Krishna's ecstatic love for us in his heart directly to us, which can go through traverse. Even if there's a million gopis between us and Krishna, or a million cowherd boys, or 1,000, that love hits our heart so deeply, it's like we are directly in his presence. And we can have that experience in our human experience by developing more of this attitude of the servant, the servant.
Actually very powerful. Oftentimes, at least through false ego, I think that, okay, I need to be the one that's directly doing the service so then I can get the mercy, but then actually being able to serve, however many layers it has to be, we can still get that mercy.
Absolutely.
So just conscious of time, we don't have other questions unless anybody else has comments or questions. I think we're good. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Absolutely amazing class.